Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. We'll bring you tactics, triumphs, and truths from the trenches of sales. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, and we're right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. I'm your host, John Rankin. I'm bringing you all the tactics and truths and triumphs from the trenches of sales and business. And in today's episode, we're with the Transition Hacker, who's going to share some amazing stuff with us. He's a veteran whose aim never falters. He's been through a lot of different stuff and is really the stories that we're looking for. Eric, so great to have you with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, John. Thanks for having me too, man.
Good, man. So I know your story. We hang out a lot. You're here local in Clarksville, Tennessee, but for the people that are listening today that don't know you, haven't ran across you and your prolific LinkedIn profile, tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you join the Army and how did you come to be here?
Yeah. Well, so I joined the Army February 1st, 1990. Poor little kid growing up, you know, and college was not an option. I actually had three dreams growing up. One was to go to Disney World, one was to go to Paris, and then one was to go to Greece. And all was because, A, we couldn't afford, you know, Disneyland, but Paris and Greece was because I was so entrenched into books that it was just a pathway out of the project. So the military provided all that. So enlisted at 17, you know, my father, he said, as soon as I turned 17, he goes, boy, this house ain't going to be big enough for two grown men. When you turn 18, you better figure it out. So the rest was history. And so, you know, I retired after 26 years, 7 months and 29 days. And that whole time period of my career, everybody used to always say, you know, why did you stay in so long? And I said, man, it was like a paid vacation every time we PCS'd somewhere. You know, living in Europe for 8 years, I got to see Paris, you know, over 20 times, I know, like the back of my hand, you know, going to Greece, all those different things was a part of, you know, enlisting in service. And so for me, it wasn't my life. It was something that I was really thankful and grateful to have been a part of. And all of the places all over the world, you know, whether deployments or friends and, you know, things like that, like it just became a very big part of my life and my identity in a lot of ways. When we PCS'd to Fort Campbell in 2014, 2016, I ended up being medically retired after 26 years. And so my wife said, hey, I think this is a good place to retire at Campbell because of the proximity to Nashville, medical care at Vanderbilt, you know, all these different things, good schools where we lived at. So all these different things kind of determined us staying at Clarksville and Fort Campbell area just because of the opportunities it presented. So that's how I ended up, you know, here at Fort Campbell. So
now what did you do while you were in? You were a logistician, right?
I was. Well, the first 6 years of my career, I actually was infantry.
Oh, so, really? I did not know that.
For my first 6 years, my first enlistment actually was for 8 years.
That was when you actually had a job.
That's when I had a job. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
But my right around 1995, my platoon sergeant, I'll never forget this. He put his arm around me and he said, because we moved JRTC from Fort Chaffee, Arkansas to Fort Polk, Louisiana. And so he put his arm around me and he goes, you see those guys that are running the gate right there? And he said, that's going to be you if you stay 20 years. Like, you need to have a career Todd Corbin, and he's like, you need to have a career that after you leave service, that it's going to be transferable. So early on in my career, like I hated the infantry. I was cold, wet. I didn't even weigh 110 pounds when I enlisted in the military. So I was always the youngest kid, smallest kid.
Oh, wow.
5'5", 108 pounds soaking wet. You know, it just doesn't make for a very good infantryman because of the, all the gear we carried. And it just wasn't where my passion was at. It was just a way to get a $2,000 enlistment bonus.
That is so interesting that you had a leader who told you that. I never had that experience when I was in. And one of the things that I've been telling everybody is, because we're both in the Army, I don't know if the Air Force and the Navy does it, but when we were in the infantry, everything was about time on target and backwards planning from the end of the mission to, everything you had to do to lead up to it. And we did that for everything from ruck march to PT to everything.
Absolutely.
Except for our transition out. I don't care if you're only serving 2 years or 20 years. Nobody's saying, hey, what's the plan when you get out?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that really set me on a different destiny for sure. You know, that was a little nugget of wisdom. And I was like, we had a supply guy that we were at Fort Polk. It was hot as all get out. But the supply guy we actually had had a pressed uniform and he had a high back Humvee that had air conditioning in it. And so he came out. We were I was going back to the AHA to pick up ammo. And he came out, cracked the back of the Humvee, and you could see the steam from the air conditioner. And he came out perfectly pressed uniform. And he's like, Jesus Christ, it's cold. And I was like, that's the MOS I want right there. Like this guy is, and that was what set me on the path to become a logistician was because of him, for sure. And I don't even remember for the life of me. I just remember what he looked like.
Right.
I don't remember what his name was, but that was the reason why I ended up becoming a logistics supply guy was to prepare for transition afterwards, all because of Todd Corbin. So.
So you get out in 2016, did you actually do anything with, logistics or supply when you got out? Because I met you shortly after you got out.
And that's a good question. And that that is kind of where the journey of Transition Hacker starts. So Fort Campbell that was the first class, the first cohort of Hiring Our Heroes. And so I knew I was going to get out. But I also knew from logistics and supply chain, Tennessee is actually a mecca for logistics. And so the reason why everybody has a distribution center in Tennessee, Amazon has their center of excellence here. I mean, you name a distribution center and they're here in Tennessee because of the proximity to, it can reach 78% of the entire United States population within about a 1 day drive. So it's geographically blessed to have the proximity to customers, which makes it cost effective. So for me getting out, I was like, man, you can't throw a stick at it and not hit a distribution center. And so doing the very first Hiring Our Heroes, everybody that was a participant was, we had HCA was one, Dell, Macy's, Amazon, and there was one, Lowe's. And those were all distribution centers. And so you didn't not have an option to go work for a distribution center. And so when I did the Hiring Our Heroes their interviews, I ended up having, actually, believe it or not, 13 job offers before I was even graduated from the class, before I even retired. So getting the job wasn't hard for me. It was, who wouldn't want to hire a 26-year Army veteran with 20 years of logistics experience? I had a bachelor's in supply chain, master's in supply chain, the certifications to go along with it, Lean Six Sigma, Black Belt, Green Belt. So I had all the accoutrements that a civilian supply chain manager or logistician would have, as well as the experience. So for me, it wasn't hard to get the job. But that's where everything kind of went bad, because what we understand logistics to be in the civilian sector is not what we think it is. And that's where I quickly understood that, managing 1,500 civilians of different age demographics was not the same as managing 1,500 soldiers.
No, it's like herding cats.
Well, it was a little bit more of a challenge than that. Not just the herding cats aspect of it, but in my facility, I actually had a grandfather, a son, and a grandson all in the same building. So how do you manage 65-year-olds, 45-year-olds, and 18-year-olds?
Yeah.
And it was a huge part of, and they were, you know, they promote through attrition. So it started to be where I wasn't even relatable to understand, how do I have to tell grown people to go to work when here they're older than me and they don't, you know, they don't have the same work ethic and work quality or committed to the mission, you know, so to speak. And then that's also where it massively unraveled that, you know, it was a 6-day work week. You know, nobody's going to pay you six figures and not own you for six figures for the most part. And so it just kind of started to slowly unravel where, you know, I was even waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and my wife was telling me, you know, don't, you know, she would say it in a way that I was taking it wrong. And so she would say, just quit. We don't need this. But the way she was saying it, I was interpreting it as she doesn't, I've never quit anything in the military. I don't care how cold, how hot, how tired, you know, it was never an option, right? Like doing the 12-mile road march for air assault school, like quitting is not an option. You see people dragging stuff, you know, get across. So for me, it was like, wow, my own spouse feels like she doesn't have faith in my abilities. And so I just started to quickly unravel. And that's where I was like, okay, getting the job isn't transitioning. It's usually what happens after you get the job, you know, the transition starts to take place, right? Like, who is your tribe around you? You know, how do you deal with, really, essentially, you're going through a midlife crisis, but also an identity crisis. You know, how's your spouse handling that? And so all that stuff just kind of came to a head where about 14 months where I said, I need to tell other people how this really is, like, yeah. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't as easy of a transition, even though it was seamless. Like, you know, I had 138 days of terminal leave. I literally took off the uniform, did my retirement ceremony May 26th and went to work 1 June. So there was no time for me to unpack who, you know, what did I want to do? Did I really even understand what the job was? I was just so focused that I have to earn six figures because that's, if I don't earn that, then I'm not earning up to my, I'm not feeling valued. Like my number, my worth was tied to that. My value and worth was tied to that number. And that was kind of, I said, man, I got to tell people this. And that's where I started telling the story on LinkedIn. Like, hey man, like it's not hard to get a job. It's, you know, it's often what happens, you know, after you get the job, you know, did you understand what that commitment was? You know, all these different things start to kind of present themselves. And that's where I started trying to tell the story.
So, you know, I spent 20 years as a civilian at Fifth Group, right? So I got to watch people transition. And it's so interesting that you bring this up because as I was watching them, get lost. They didn't know who they were outside of being at the Legion. They didn't have an identity outside of shooting bad guys. And here you are, you have the very opposite transition that they did, but you end up at the same place they did. Why do you think that, because I see it all the time, running my SkillBridge program now, I see it as well. Why do you think that as the military, whether we're Army or Navy, or maybe you kind of served and did the Air Force, why do they go through that? What is it about the transition that causes them to get lost in process?
Well, that's a very common problem that happens. I think ultimately it literally has to do with, in the military, you create a family that you choose, and the Army or the military in general fosters that, you know, no matter what the political dilemmas usually is, right? The military can put everybody from a socioeconomic demographic background and put us all in the same room. And they're going to be our brothers and sisters, right? We will defend them till the day that we die, right? Yep. And most recently, you even seen with the Navy SEALs where one fell off, the other one went in after him, right? So, and that's their policy. Like in the Army, we had you didn't go anywhere without a battle buddy, right? So we've fostered this attachment to each other. And then when you retire, there isn't anything to help you unpack what 18 years of an attachment has been created. And then now you've taken them away and you've set them off to the side over here in an environment. And I really talk about this a lot too, because only 6.8% of the entire US population is a veteran, right? So that means literally 93% of the entire US population is not your tribe. Yep. And that's the same as if I took you to South America, where only 6% might speak English, the other 93% will not. And so now you've taken somebody from 20 years plus and you've put them in a community that with no support, with no tribe, with no identity anymore, because now you're living and breathing the way the rest of the 93%. So you're kind of out of a fish out of water. And then you throw on, what kind of identity crisis is my spouse going through, right? Are we married? You know, have we seen each other in, the past? How many years have we seen each other, but how many years have we been apart? Right. Are they going through a challenge? Am I going through a challenge? You know, is this job what I want? Like, there is no more marriage retreats. There's no more go see the first sergeant, go see Sergeant Major, go talk to, there's just no more tribe. And so most of the time, that's when things kind of, kind of go south. And I think a lot of it has to do with, it's just purely, you're never going to do the things that you did in the military. You're never going to be around the people that were as equally committed to being with you during that. And that's a very lonely place to be at.
Yeah. You know, it's not the same, but it's almost identical, right? Professional athletes go through the same thing.
Absolutely. You know, I've heard that. Career,
they go through this season of, well, now that athletics has been stripped away, who am I? And I don't have the football team or the baseball team or the MMA gym or the whatever, right? And right. I went through that when I retired from MMA after I think I fought for 10, 12 years. And it was really like, now what? Like, right. I don't even know who I am anymore. So it's just always interesting when I see that taking place inside the veteran community. And
right.
Now, to stump you, I don't expect you to have an answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How do we fix that?
Well, I don't think that's a $1 million question that I don't think there's really a good answer for, right? The military's main mission is to get people into and serve. Yep. It is not to get them prepared to leave. Although I think it should be a facet of it, because if you prepare them to leave, they can be the best recruiting tool for you. I don't think we would have as many challenges, but again, I don't think it's a priority for their budget and their financial focus to encourage how do we successfully get you out of here.
Yeah.
And really some of that also is, it's not really their place to. There's 44,000 Sea of Goodwill of private nonprofits that their main purpose is there to help anyway. And it's not, it can be like you're starving and you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet. There's so many supportive services and nonprofits out there to help. I think that even makes it worse. So that's the $1 million question is how do you prepare them for it when there's that many amount of, available resources? But at the same token, it's now become overwhelming for the veteran because they don't know what's there for them, right?
Yep.
So I don't really have a good answer for it. But
companies ask me this all the time about SkillBridge, right? Well, why isn't everybody doing SkillBridge? And why doesn't everybody know about it? And I'm like, well, you have a couple of competing agendas, right? So the military, the government doesn't want to pay unemployment on all these people.
Absolutely.
However, we can't let all of these people all out at the same time into the skill bridge because then we don't have a fighting force capable of a two-front war.
Right. So
we have these competing agendas.
Yeah. And that's a very good point with that too, And then the other part of that, if you went to the macro level, there's not even a budget to market those capabilities.
Yeah, there's so many people that don't even know. You and I have been talking about this and working on this together, the benefits available, the transition benefits available. I still get people who have never heard of SkillBridge that are active,
right.
Or the COOL program is another good example of that. How many people, I read something about the COOL program, it's less than like 5% of the fighting force actually uses that program.
Right. Well, and and that goes into the lack of information even while you're in service. But also, like you said, that if I let him go, then we can't go to the field because I don't have enough people to drive, trucks on its way out, whatever the case may be. So your commander and your first sergeant are still going to be a little hesitant to release their, manpower, so to speak, to let you do those credentialing online opportunities or those skill bridge. Because it might hurt my bandwidth to be able to operate as well. So, but at the same token that you have companies that are using SkillBridge, but when HR leaves and that body of knowledge leaves to them, the company loses that, awareness and information as well. Like, wait, there's SkillBridge? It's like, yeah, you used to have somebody. And so, you know, you constantly are fighting against information awareness and lack of information awareness all the time. So. Yeah.
So you had an actually a pretty decent, as far as like the military side goes, transition process. You actually got to take advantage of your full terminal leave. You actually got to do a skill bridge program. You actually had some mentorship that kind of set you up for success to start doing some forward thinking about what does life look like after I'm done. And then yet you ended up still kind of wandering a bit. And, you know, here you are now, 8 years later, not in logistics, known as the transition hacker, teaching LinkedIn everywhere. Tell me a little bit about that journey and how that came about.
That's a really good point, right? What you were trained to do in the military might not necessarily be what you want to do after you leave the service, right? And I heard a good saying a while ago that said, you know, a resume just contains everything I don't want to do again. And that was something that was like, well, yeah, right. It sticks out because it shows where you came from. It doesn't necessarily show you what you want to do. Right.
Right.
And, you know, my uncle, he actually retired, you know, 20 years from the Marine Corps. And he even said something a little bit different, right? Was if you come in the military at 20 years old, you do your 20 years and you retire to 40, but you live to 80, as the statistics of society says, then when you leave service, that's halftime in your game of life,
yep.
Right? Like you got to come out from halftime swinging for third quarter. And sometimes third quarter means you might have to sit on the bench. You might not want to be playing that role. You know, you could be doing something different, right? You know, again, everybody's instance is going to be a little bit different. You know, I had young kids. First daughter was in 2010. And then second daughter was in 2014. So I still have young kids, even though I did, you know, shy of three decades. You know, retiring was not going to be an option financially for sure. But because also I waited so late to start, you know, with having kids and stuff like that. So, you know, everybody's situation is going to be a little bit different. But for me, you know, I really understood that what I was trained to do might not necessarily be what I really wanted to do, but I still needed a job, right? So that kind of was something that I just kind of had to stumble through that process, you know, and, you know, going to become the director of veteran services for the state of Tennessee, you know, working with Department of Labor for 5 years also showed me that, you know, typical rule of thumb for veterans is 2 to 3 jobs in 3 to 5 years, right? That's till we figure out, we don't know what we want to do when we grow up. Right. And that's a process, you know, that just takes attunement and fine tuning along the way, getting some good mentors and things like that. A veteran is not at risk of not having a job. They're at risk of getting the wrong job because there's not a company that won't hire you because the minute you throw out you're a veteran, there's not a company that's going to say no, that's not going to hire you. There's a lot of misconceptions, you know, but generally, you know, companies are there to fill bodies, butts to seats. And sometimes they get it wrong because they place the wrong person in the wrong position.
Sure.
It's not their job to figure your life out for you. It's up to you to kind of figure it out. And you're going to stumble through that. So
one of the things I do in my skill bridge, I'm going to use this to ask you a question, is on day one, when I have you come in to do the LinkedIn portion, before you come in, the first thing we're doing is talking about, you've been in the military for whatever, 2 years, 20 years, doesn't matter. What is it that is on your heart and your mind that you want to do now? Like, what's life look like for the next? Because for many of these people, they've got at least of 20, 25 years of good working life left. And some of them, I've got one in my class that she's 25. So she's got almost 50 years of working life left, right? So Do you think in hindsight, had you had a leader in your life that was like, hey, Eric, who are you? Is this who you are, or what do you want to do? And started the process of you thinking through that towards the beginning of your career instead of the end of the career. I mean, if you had to guess, how do you think things would have played out for you then?
Well, I don't think it would have played out much differently. Okay. What I do think would have played out differently was the ability to circle a tribe of people that have already walked the pathway. So I think looking back on hindsight, I probably should have talked to more of the older guys that had gotten out already. And I should have, you know, instead of focused on what I did, determined that success looked like was, I'm going to get a job. I need a job to pay six figures. That is what success looks like. It had nothing to do with me personally. It had nothing to do with other family dynamics of where is my spouse at. It had nothing to do with any of that. And I think if I would have reached out to more veterans that had already got out or had already been out for, you know, 2 or 3 years, whether that could have been, you know, the men's ministry at church at Life Point Ministry or something, if I would have been more open to seeking their knowledge, it might have been a little bit better. Because yeah, I think we're so siloed. When we get ready to leave services, the number one priority for us is job. And that's really not the case. And I think if I would have, you know, maybe had more mentors out already, mm-hmm. that would have provided a little bit more, you know, a little bit more of a holistic conversation, I think it would have changed.
I'm seeing that already in the skill bridge, where guys and girls are hopping on the first job opportunity that really solidifies for them.
Absolutely.
It's almost like there's a panic, you know, like,
you're exactly right.
What if I don't get a job? And then you have the federal government on the other side, kind of trying to force feed them into a job fast so they don't have to pay unemployment. Right. So you have all these competing agendas taking place. And what I've been trying to get my students to see, you don't have to take the first thing. Like, we have time, because you're going to do your skill bridge, and then you probably got some leave, and then you got moving, if your unit didn't let you already move and clear and all that kind of stuff. Right. And I think that's really important that the people that are listening understand that we don't have to rush to the decision. There are employment opportunities out there everywhere. You and I talk about this all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm remembering, you know, Colonel Rob Campbell was my brigade commander. He actually wrote a book, and he said something that really was profound to me. He said, why do we rush to fail when we leave service, or we rush to compromise the very values that we selflessly sacrifice to serve? Oh. You know, we're willing to rush into a job without even thinking, like, do I need six figures? Am I compromising my, you know, morality, my integrity? Am I compromising the values just for a number? And that kind of really stuck out to me too, right? I think you need to take a tactical pause before you rush into a job, for sure. I think that would eliminate a lot of the burdens. That it's not going to make it go away all entirely, because you're going to be at a different season in your own life as a human being, for sure. You know, but I definitely think taking a tactical pause with the right mentors around you to help guide that decision, I think that's a very, you know, good step as well. So
yeah. What's the name of that book?
It's called At Ease. It's by Rob Campbell. Okay. And if anybody wants to connect with him on LinkedIn, you know, he is phenomenal. Yeah. Which is funny. He was my brigade commander, signed my terminal leave or declined my terminal leave because I had so much of it at the time. But we talked through it and ended up taking 138 days of terminal leave, which I think was wrong. I think, again, that was another decision looking back on it, was like, I probably should have took a 30-day vacation for myself. You know, I did my retirement ceremony. It was Memorial Day weekend. We had family and friends down to see us. They called me on Friday and asked if I could go to work on Monday. And my wife was like, why did you tell them yes? Like, we've got family. You just retired. Like, what's their, you know, again, all these little success clues was like, man, I should have took time for myself, you know. Yeah. Oh, and even her, right? I needed to take some time to reconnect with her as well, you know. Yeah, because we hadn't seen each other for so long. So
we don't really talk about that. I have friends, you know, just like you, that spent 20, 25 years in the military. I've got one of my very good buddies, and out of the 20 years that he was in, 11 of them, he was deployed in the GWAT in Afghanistan, Iraq, and even parts of Africa. 11 out of 20 years
he was deployed. It's not uncommon.
Yeah. And, you know, you start to look at that and you look at the family dynamics. If you have young children, they really don't even know you. And your spouse has been operating on their own for so long. All that takes years to undo.
Absolutely.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
So during your transition, or maybe it was after, you ended up coming up with, because you're a logistician and a geek with numbers, you came up with this calculator. Tell me about that.
So I was a very big fan of life hacks, right? Anything that can make, you know, maximize my time, right? Efficiently, whatever can help me do something faster, you know, just to make things happen. When I was starting to unpack, what did I do right? What did I do wrong from service? I said, man, there's got to be different tips and tricks or hacks that we can apply post-service that would either help us get the job faster, help fine-tune these decisions that we make along the way. And that gap calculator was one of them. And do you mind if I share the screen now?
Go ahead.
Okay. So what I did was, and it kind of circles back and relates to what you talked about, like, what if we are so siloed with thinking about a job when we really don't need to, you know, rush into the job right off the bat. And so when it came to the gap calculator, and I don't see if it's populating yet.
I can see your screen. I can see the graph.
Okay, gotcha. So what I did with the gap calculator was I said, you know what, let's talk. I kind of did two things, right? I wanted to show people peace of mind that says, hey, you don't need to rush into and replace the income that you're getting on active duty. And so if you looked at the gap calculator, you know, with your BAH, BAS, all these different things as a part of it, I say, well, and I did it for all pay grades, but I just started off with this one, right? And I did this because a lot of veterans would get out of Fort Campbell and they would say, hey, I need to make, you know, I'm an E7 with 20 years. I need to replace this income. I'm getting ready to lose it when I retire. And so I started looking at it like, hey, you know, your chance of living in Clarksville, Montgomery County and making this are slim to none. But if you look at it and you say, hey, I've got, you know, a gap, if you will, to be where I was at before in active duty, in this case, you know, and I've updated it every single year. When you look at it and you say, okay, well, this is what you're going to get in retirement. Well, your gap is only $67,000. Now, it might make it a little easier for you if you say, hey, can I find a job paying $67,000 to be at where I was at? And then I say, it's a little bit better, right? Doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to find it that easily because right. Clarksville is kind of a manufacturing town and they generally don't pay wages like that. Because most of the driving force in the workforce part of it is low to no skill. It's so close to the border of Southern Kentucky. And, you know, there's a very healthy amount of population that don't have high school diplomas, college, right, things of that nature. And so, you know, that kind of determines wages. And then when you look at, you know, hey, I might get a, you know, have a VA identified disability. Well, you know, if you get a VA disability of 50% like that, that might mean that your gap is, you know, $50,000. You know, if you're 90%, it might mean $34,000 and so forth. So I started looking at that, like, not as the VA disability portion of it, but I started saying, look, you're going to get a pension. This is just the number you need to focus on. Now, that might make it a little bit easier for you to say, I don't have to drive to Nashville for an hour and a half to get there to go find, you know, that $70,000 salary, so to speak. So it was a way for me to kind of look at it like, if it's one more visual trick or tip that I can do that helps you fine tune your decision for employment, then that might take a little bit of a burden off of you. And sure. So that was the reason why I started creating this, was because I was just trying to assemble a toolkit of tips and tricks to get you to see, you know, hey, you might not need to drive to Nashville to make six figures. You might be able to find a job that pays that, you know, $67,000 gap in Clarksville, possibly, right? So
let me ask you a question about this calculator. So you got BAH sure. over here, okay?
Yep.
$25,596.
Yep.
Now, when you go to the calculator, does that factor in that BAH is not taxable and you need to replace a portion of that?
Absolutely. Okay. So when you do the math on that, when you go to the worksheet on the gap calculator, you already subtract the taxes off of both your active duty pay, because only the base pay is taxable from the IRS. And then you also take into consideration your retired paycheck, which is, you know, this is what you're going to get. And then let's look at taxes on the retirement pension, not on the BAH, BAS. And so that was one of the big things that I wanted to spotlight on, that you're not going to get those when you retire. You're still going to pay taxes on your base pay or your retirement paycheck. But just to paint you a better picture, I wanted the visualization to show, hey, this is including everything, and you're only taxed on this. You're not taxed on this.
Right.
So that's a huge, you know,
huge thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, the calculator is really easy to navigate, and it will generate for the individual, because then when you look at it, if you go into the entering in your dates, then what happens is, you know, exactly what date you're going to retire at, and you can back up your 36, you know, months based off of whatever you add here and whatever goes in here, because it goes into your high three, right? Once you change your years of service, your rank, your, you know, VA calculations, if you have children, things like that, all of this is specific to you as an individual. It doesn't necessarily be a blanket, although the chart I created is generally the rule of thumb. I did all ranks with it, but it's just generally saying, hey, let's start with, you know, an E7 at 20 years, right? At a bare minimum, you know, no matter the rank, no matter the service, let's just start somewhere to give you a better visualization. And once you start filling out your own data, it takes about 10 minutes, 15 minutes for you to put your own data into it. And then it spits out your own individual gaps across the board. So that was the whole purpose of it, was just to simplify your thought process and put a visual that might put your mind at ease, right? Because when I was going through Hiring Our Heroes, everybody was really uncomfortable and very stressed, because they were focused on, this is what I'm making on active duty. I need to find a job to make this. And more times than not, especially when you retire around a military installation, you're not going to find a job in Clarksville that pays that, unless you're an engineer or, you know, something. Doesn't mean you can't work up to it, but you're not going to find that. You're going to have to drive to Nashville.
And that's one of the things in our skill bridge that I bring up often is this BAH number. You have to remember, that's not actually $25,000. That's more like $35,000, because that's non-taxable income.
Oh, absolutely. And that calculator does all that for you, right? Yeah. It just takes the taxes specifically. I walk you through the websites to go to get all this. And then when you go to the LinkedIn actually shares the link on the share drive that you can go through and download. I have everything there nice, neat for you. You can download it yourself and then tweak it to yourself and stuff like that. So it was just one way to kind of share it, out.
So, you know, you have this on your LinkedIn, and this became a really big deal on LinkedIn. Before you did this gap calculator, how many people did you have on LinkedIn?
So I went from around maybe 40, 50 people on LinkedIn to, I think it's like 33 to 37,000 people following me on LinkedIn now. And I'll trim it. I try to keep it right around that mark all the time, because, you know, people come in, drop off. There's just not much value add. But yeah, I've gotten about over 30,000. I think on Instagram right now, I'm right around 38 or 40,000 followers on Instagram. All of it was just literally just sharing, you know, my journey. What did I do right? What did I do wrong? How easy is it to get a job? And then you might not need to take the job that you think you need to, or chase that salary. You know, you might do some good to, you know, take a, you know, pay cut, and just try to focus on closing your gap and then growing with the company, you know, and learning what you really want to do, right? You'd be trained to be a logistician. You might not want to be a logistician, and that's okay, you know? So I think between all the platforms now, it's just starting to take off a little bit better for me.
Yeah. And what were you before you did this kind of stuff, the gap calculator?
What do you mean? Like, what did I do employment wise?
Yeah, like, how many people do you think you had on your LinkedIn before you did the gap calculator?
Well, so before the gap calculator, I think I was probably right around maybe 7,000 to 10,000 followers. Yeah. The gap calculator has definitely expedited it.
One day we were having coffee and you were telling me this thing just blew up on you. You really didn't think it was going to be all that. And then it really kind of changed everything for you on LinkedIn, right?
It absolutely did. Because it was bringing some value that people could feel. right? It wasn't just necessarily like, ah, man, here's another guy telling me about a veteran challenge and getting employment. Like this is a different message. This is a message that's saying I might not necessarily have to chase a salary to define my worth or my value. And I can actually kind of somewhat take a tack pause. So that kind of was what changed it. It pretty much ramped up pretty quickly. So,
yeah. So transition hacker, and this is kind of goes into what we're talking about right now with this gap calculator. What are some of the top, and I know you got a book coming out where you're going to talk about some of these type of things, but what are some of the top hacks that you could share with the crowd to help them in their transition?
There are a lot of benefits that a lot of veterans misassume, or, you know, hey, I have to be 100% to get property tax, a tax credit, you know, on my property. Right. You know, you might not need to be 100%. You might need, depending upon your county, you might only need to be 50%. They might even prorate it all the way up to 90% for you. You know, it's not just about hunting and fishing license. It could be you're 100% disabled and you need, you know, the parking pass at the B&A airport where you won't have to pay for parking. Like there's so many benefits. And that was one of the challenges that we had was every, you know, Tennessee, for example, it's not just about hunting and fishing. You know, you can get 50% off at any state park in their lodging within the state of Tennessee. And that there's just not a lot of conversation around a lot of the benefits that you may be entitled to that the state happily does to recognize your service. You know, a lot of times it goes back to that lack of communication and marketing, right? Yep. Because if they tell everybody, then next thing you know, that there is a price associated with that. Sometimes, you know, whether that's not paying property tax or vehicle registration, it is going to have a cost on, you know, budgets at state levels. And so a lot of times there's kind of competing interests on different benefits that you're entitled to that just not a lot of people talk about. The biggest misconception is it's not just about, you know, if hunting and fishing licenses within your state. There is, you know, a lot of other benefits that you may be entitled to that you just don't know about.
What do you think your top ones that you found are?
The property tax exemption. Really, I had under the misconception that you had to be 100% to get a property tax exception or exemption. When the reality of it is, most counties in Tennessee will prorate it. So if you're 90%, take your VA letter down because they might prorate your property taxes off 90%.
Right.
So that was a huge one. The second one was the parking at B&A Airport with the B&A Cares program. You know, because that you might fly out of state for a specialist at Walter Reed, and you know, parking at B&A Airport, you know, could be $26 a day. But if you're at Walter Reed for 4 days, you know, that's $100. But if you're under the B&A Cares, you won't have to pay for any of that. So
yeah,
that's
once just you told me about that, I think it was 15 other states that do the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that is just some of the stuff we just try to, you know, whatever tips and tricks that are a benefit. You know, if you don't have to pay property tax on your house, then obviously your gap is going to be, your living expenses might not be as big as they were before. They might go down. Starting to even unpack, I did the surrounding 8 states to Tennessee to compare the cost of living. We have the lowest property taxes. If you look at Florida and Texas, which has massive, you know, veteran populations, they pay 3 times the property taxes that we have in Tennessee. Again, if it's cutting into your, you know, your top number of your, you know, costs, your residual costs, well, Tennessee kind of makes it a little bit more marketable because our property taxes are lower. Our homeowners insurance is lower compared to those other states. So whatever lowers those overhead costs, which rises, you know, kind of makes you get to keep more of your retirement dollars, then it goes back into, you might not even need to work. You might just need to take
taxes here. I mean, that's
absolutely, you know, we have the lowest electricity in the United States because we have Oak Ridge, we have nuclear power plants here. Yep. Tennessee has 97% pure power, which is also another reason that we have the most amount of manufacturing facilities in Tennessee because we can deliver pure power without blackouts. So, I mean, there's just so many other things. You know, we budget, and I have a 3,000 square foot house. I budget $2,400 a year for electricity. No other state do I know of that pays less than $2,400 a year for electricity. You know, again, it was just a better quality of life economically for the location where we retired. that I didn't need to rush into a job to pay six figures because I might not need that. So
yeah, so let's put out a disclaimer here real quick, though, about that. If you are listening and you're from California, this is for veterans, not for you. So don't come to Tennessee. I'm just kidding.
And you know, that's a,
because there's,
you know,
80,000 people from California moving to Tennessee every year.
Yeah, it's about 108 a day. Yeah, to relocate here. So it's crazy. A lot.
So if they happen to listen to this show, this was not for you. And I mean, Tennessee is a great state for all that. I mean,
it is, and
I mean, we have a lot more than that. I mean, just on the state tax side and kind of the cost of living side, but then we have mountains and we have forests and we have rivers. It's a beautiful state all the way around, right? Whereas where you get to Texas, and Texas is a great state too, but it's pretty much the same geography all the way through it.
Right.
I love Tennessee, man. So
yeah, it was definitely a game changer.
Yeah. So let's talk just real briefly as we kind of wrap up here. Let's whet the appetite. So you have a book coming out. Tell me about that.
So in my role with the Director of Veteran Services of the State of Tennessee, the first thing I said was, I was starting to see that there was benefits that I didn't know about. And I was just got to thinking about it. And that was, let's compile all of the benefits that Tennessee offers veterans, including the things that we didn't, you know, talk about, like the parking, you know, or parking in downtown Nashville, right? Like, you don't have to pay for parking at any public parking space in the state of Tennessee. So I thought about that and I said, what if it's like this in other states as well? You know, what are the benefits truly at every other state? And I went online trying to look, you know, military.com, things like that. And nobody ever really compiled a total list per state of all their benefits. And what I've noticed is every state has become fiercely competitive with attracting military retirees, because it's also that residual impact of, absolutely, they're going to be buying school, you know, buying roads, buying houses, paying for, you know, kids to go to school. So keeping them in the state is of the utmost benefit to the state. And so, but nobody really kind of has compiled that total list. And that's what I wanted to do differently. We just tried to gather a 50 state booklet of all the real benefits that every state has to offer, and then just kind of help share that out so that we can kind of close that knowledge gap.
And what's the best way for somebody to connect with you?
The best way is online, on LinkedIn, actually. I'm TransitionHacker1 at Instagram, TransitionHack at X, and then Eric C. Horton on LinkedIn.
So guys, if you're listening today and you want that book, coming out this year, drop a comment so that we can get the information to you. And if you want to connect with Eric and get the gap calculator from him, you can get that on his LinkedIn, Eric C. Horton, on LinkedIn. And there's a lot of opportunity out there for us, as veterans, as retirees. And the truth is that we just don't know about them. And that's kind of, you know, been one of you and I's conversation is, how do we get this information out? The information of, and right now we're just talking about state or / government benefits. That doesn't include the private corporate benefits that companies across the country are giving out. There are companies that do free interviewing and free resume building, and there's a ton of different opportunities out there for us. And if we don't, as a tribe, spread that information, then we'll never hear about it. So just wanted to thank you for your time, man. I love having you around and being able to come to my classes and speak to my students and to come on the podcast. And I hope that as we grow this year, more and more people will connect with you to get these benefits. And you see there that Eric's pretty cheap. He just wants a cup of coffee. So if you guys are listening, you could go and give him a cup of coffee on his Venmo for the gap calculator. You should probably raise those prices. Should do
like I should.
A frou-frou coffee, $8. It's got to be a minimum of $8.
Absolutely. So, I didn't want to break the bank. I just wanted to, you know, if they feel value.
How many hours did it take you to put that together? What'd you spend on that?
Well, so it has been evolving. So when I do the update every year, it really takes me about 4 days, right? So and that's, I'll do, you know, enlisted on one day, you know, senior enlisted on another day and warrant officers on another one. And then I'll fine tune, you know, if it, you know, because there's obviously less on warrant officers and officers. So it usually takes me a little longer on the enlisted side of the house. But it used to take me in about an hour per person to do it because, you know, on that worksheet, I would really go back like, hey, when did you make E7? You know, were you O6, E6 over here? So I really tried to make it as specific to the individual for sure. And then, you know, going to all the websites to plug in these numbers to get it to come back. It would take me about an hour per person to do it. So, you know, and if you think about that, an hour for a cup of coffee, right, is, you know, I don't know any plumbers are going to show up to your house for an hour and not charge you $100.
Yeah.
And so, but you'd be surprised at how many people down. I think I've had like over 19,000 people download it. And, you know, I can, it's exponentially taken up the last year, the past couple of weeks for sure. But prior to this year, everybody would download it and not contribute anything to it. So.
Well, that'll be a conversation for another day about veterans and the freebie mentality, because you and I have talked about this, that they're going from a socialist society to a capitalist society, and they're about to get awakened. So they're going to figure it out really quickly. Man, thanks so much for coming on and spending your time with me today. I really appreciate it. And guys, connect with him on LinkedIn, get the wage gap calculator, and make sure you send him a cup of coffee. Eric, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, brother. Have a good one.
Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Sales Platoon for more updates and veteran success stories. Join us next time as we continue to decode the art of selling through the unique perspectives of those who've served.